And spinning off once again from our What Am I Watching series, thank you for finding the Hollow Nine Network's Iconic Moments in Movie History podcast, where we pick some of our favorite moments and some of the moments that just stand out and stand the test of time and talk about why. Why do we love them? Why have they lasted? Why are they iconic? What does it mean to you? To me, you'll find out with a couple friends joining me tonight. As always, we have Gomez, not Adams.
Hello!
And from outside the Hollow Nine universe, joining us all the way from the Jock and Nerd podcast, please welcome Imran.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. And you picked three really awesome geeky moments that I'm super excited to discuss.
Thank you, thank you. Well, we try, you know, it's like we kind of throw some ideas around and then we always find out like, hey, we're doing this like covering three different decades, that thing. Although I think is Superman 2 in the 80s as well? It's 82, right?
Yeah, early
80s. It is 1980.
Ugh,
on the cusp.
We should have done the first movie, but I still like what we're going with thematic with these three choices. So I kind of want to leave it alone, but... Still,
1980 was kind of like the 70s anyway.
Yeah. It was, yeah, and then like the next one is kind of like in between, and then the 90s one.
So. Yeah, so we're doing for the first time on the show comic book movies, some iconic moments from comic book movies. So we're calling it Comic Book Movies Volume 1, and let's kick it off with the first one on the list from 1980. Superman 2 and the moment.
Before Zod.
I mean,
Terrence Stamp.
Dude is awesome. Dude is like that was back, I feel like it was not as big a deal for someone who was such a high profile, high stature, trained, respected actor to take a Superman movie part. Like, maybe it's because I was so little watching these for the first time. It was just like, they were just as respected as everything else. Nowadays, if like this were like Anthony Hopkins taking the role, everybody would be like, holy shit, he's actually doing a comic book movie?
Well, he's done a comic book movie. He's done a
right.
Marvel's doing that with, like, Robert Redford and your Glenn Close and your Tilda Swinton. Honestly, I didn't know Howard Stamp was a thing when I saw it. I just thought he was an awesome Zod. I was like, this little guy, he's really powerful.
Yeah.
They were trapped in the glass and they got out.
One of my best parts about that is that Zod existed in the comic books before this movie.
Right.
Okay? But then they were never really sure what to do with him. And so they finally somebody came back and like, you know what? The best Zod ever was the film version.
Yeah. Mm.
What with that?
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. How do we talk about it without comparing him a little bit to Michael Shannon?
I mean, he was a good Zod, too. It's a different take on Zod.
Totally, totally different take, yeah.
But, you know, in the first Superman, like, you get, like, the way they're dressed even calls back to, like, Star Wars, like, the Return of the Jedi, like, the black costumes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sleek. And this moment, dude, the turn of, I remember this so vividly when I was watching this movie, because, like, you didn't notice the red lights were on the outside.
Right.
And good, thank God they had Gene Hackman and Mr. Exposition and kind of explaining it to us to drive that point home. And you're like, oh, he's smart. It was just such a great moment as a kid.
He switched it, so they were out here.
The whole reason that
he was in there,
they were kind of acting as the double cross there, so that they would to help trick Zod and company.
Yeah. You had Superman being on like a Batman World's Greatest Detective Master Strategist moment there too. It was a lot, but I think a lot of it too though is just in the idea of how long the build up to this moment is that Zod has like wanted to say this for so long. You know what I mean?
You know, from a part of the movie, he's literally running around chasing him, going, "Kneel before Dawn! Kneel before Dawn! What are you doing? Come here! Kneel before Dawn!"
Screaming it over TV, too. Yeah, like, you know, like, "Kneel before me, son!"
You know, I like a little kid.
Yeah. I came here for two things. To make you kneel and to dominate Earth. I can pass on dominating Earth.
Yeah.
I need you to kneel.
And I like their idea of dominating Earth was making the President of the United States kneel before them. It's just kneeling's a big deal back then, and it didn't mean it wasn't immediately wouldn't have gone into a sexual connotation thing either. It would just been like, whoa, so sign of respect. Get on your fucking knees and bow to me.
I love how Suicide Squad kind of paid homage to that moment with that line in the beginning. About just, you know, if superheroes came out of the White House and took over. But in this movie, he also, we forget, Superman Clark loses his powers, gets his powers back. Like, it kind of sets the trend, like, the Spider-Man movies were, like, the same thing as the Superman movies. The second Spider-Man movie, he loses his powers, and he gets his powers back, and it was a redemption. Like, this set, like, kind of the comic book blueprint.
Yeah.
Way early moving forward.
The
and so
trope.
After him getting his powers back, and then he starts crushing his hand, and you hear the little...
Yeah, and Terrence Stamp screw that.
His face, it's so
well, he like cool. lifted, like. It's like, this is why you did Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, man.
And then he like the great like wire, slow floaty throw over, clearly on a wire. Yeah. You know what I wish in Man of Steel? Like, I ideally wanted to go a new way and have a new score and Hans Zimmer, yada yada, whatever. I just wish that moment when. And when he's a kid and he's lifting the bus.
Yeah.
Just give me a little... How badass would that be?
Just a touch would have been nice.
Made up for a lot if for that fucking movie.
Yeah, I mean, I still love Man of Steel. Don't get me wrong. I think, as far as I know, DC, it's questionable what you want to consider their steps towards trying to catch up to the Marvel Universe.
They got a lot of work ahead of them.
Dude. Absolutely.
They're still figuring it out.
But I thought Man of Steel was a valiant tentpole when it was just on its own.
I mean, I think Batman vs. Superman made that movie seem even more...
absolutely.
In comparison, you're like, you know, Man of Steel wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I kind of like the overlap scene in the beginning that really legitimizes this existing at all, because thank you, you know. But yeah, it's, I think too, though, there's something about the idea that for Zod thinking he has his victory moment and having it be, the rug pulled out from underneath him, you know, but there's something about a villain having that moment though, you know, like we kind of, as the audience, want them to have that moment because there's something iconic about it where you're like, fuck, we could lose if some shit like this goes down. Like, this guy could get... Loki made a bunch of people kneel when he first showed up, you know? Yeah. Like, everyone's like, oh, God, whoa, okay. This is going to suck.
Balls, though. You never see that. How about a movie ending where the bad guy actually wins, and you're like, fuck. And, like, you just throw everyone off.
Yeah.
It kind of happened at the end of Batman vs. Superman, I guess, in a really dumb way.
You see a lot of that happen not in superhero movies.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
horror movies pull that a lot.
Yeah.
Thinking like the Tales of the Crypt movies.
Yeah.
You want to go comic book movie.
There you go. Keeping it in
both Bordello of Blood and the first one, Demon Knight.
Yeah.
The bad guy, I mean, the good guys don't necessarily win.
Or they win, it's just, it's a battle, not the war. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like and that's what they, I think that's kind of, you have to have an element of that because it's a universe, you know? And I think especially for this series of Superman movies, the only universe it had was its own franchise. You know what I mean? And it was definitely in the time before the concept. I mean, I remember growing up thinking they would never do movies like this where it's all of these different characters teamed up because of the way the studios are with their properties. It's like Warner Brothers has Batman. That is it forever, you know,
and exactly.
Now it's like, but hey, that's part of like this new sub company now that they're doing.
That's been one of my complaints though about the Marvel movies is that there hasn't been a really great villain per se in the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
I mean, they all kind of have the same basic. I'm going to destroy everything.
Thanos has been lurking.
Thanos has been
lurking. Guys, there are other plots.
Yeah. Well, they suffered through the mirror, you know, doppelganger villain thing, which is just, it gets so boring. Everyone, the bad guy is the opposite of the good guy. We get it.
Yeah.
But that villain, that's hard to nail down. They did it with Loki. They kind of did it with like Kilgrave and Jessica Jones.
Ooh,
like I thought he was just that's a guy you cannot stop. Mm-hmm. Like how do you stop a guy? You just tell you to hey stop and then you're done. Like, what do you have to do? I guess you could wear earplugs though. Mm. I guess why didn't they ever wear earplugs in that show?
There you go. See now you unraveled. You unraveled the other half of it.
I mean, probably the best villain that I've seen come out of them is Kingpin.
Yeah.
Kingpin was great. And it's interesting how it's on the Netflix shows, but the problem is,
perspective. There hasn't been a great. I mean, Thanos maybe kind of.
Well, we haven't seen enough of Thanos in action.
From a greater scope perspective, there haven't been a really great villain yet for the Marvel movies. I feel.
Yet we had this villain introduced in the first movie because don't they get banished to the Phantom Zone? And isn't that one of the first things we see?
In Superman 1.
Yeah.
Original Superman. That's the first thing that happens, is they're getting banished to the Phantom Zone.
And the idea of it just being this pane of glass that they are like stuck in a prism.
I mean, think Jor-El would say, hey, Sean, by the way.
I kind of threw
bombs out into space because there's these bad guys out there and they're just imprisoned in glass, just a pane of glass. I work a little bit delicate.
Now it's Kryptonian glass, so if it moved towards Earth's yellow sun, would it have survived those nuclear waves? Yeah. Here we go.
This is the first time they it was a callback. It was a continuing storyline in these movies. Like I think that blew people away. And then was this that moment? Was it part of Donner's cut? Because I know like half of that second movie, and I still haven't seen Richard Donner's cut. I need to see.
If Donner's cut includes that elevator in the Empire in the Eiffel Tower, then I think that has to be because that's what releases them from the Phantom Zone. Is there some other? Thing that lets them out in the Donner cut?
No, that's what it's the same thing in the Donner cut.
Okay.
I mean, the Donner cut does other things, and I mean, there's a lot of debate over which one is the best version, obviously.
Yeah.
I still think the best version is somewhere in between the Donner cut and the other.
I think it's one of the ones that was made for television broadcast, right? For network broadcast. Because, isn't there one that has, more stuff included with the moon? Like, I know there's, an argument where, he said he saw a girl. He said he saw a girl? I thought he said he saw a curl. What's a curl? Isn't that one of those things that's hurtling through space, leaving gas trails? And it was, this little stupid thing that I remember seeing in this movie growing up as a kid.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
That
at
I've
all.
Only seen, once or twice, and I've never seen it in any of the cuts I've watched since. So I'm like, oh, maybe I haven't seen the Donner cut either. I don't know.
I heard it was just darker and there was less humor. Like, what they added were the silly scenes where, the guy gets hit with the ice cream when the wind's blowing and he's in the phone booth and it gets knocked down and
I'm gonna throw my S at you.
Oh, that was that added?
That's not Donner cut or that is Donner.
Yeah, I just think he would have done that.
I kind of liked that one.
That was like, okay, we need Superman to have yet more powers.
Yeah.
Could make my S into a giant net that slams you against the wall.
Yeah,
but
weird.
Them holding that guy up in the air, and the guy's like, please let him down. He's a general. Please, Mr. General, please let him down. Like that shit I thought was pretty intense because it's like, yo, they're already just killing kids, man, or killing people's parents in front of them.
That was actually, I think that was.
That's Donner cut.
Where the kid just gets killed. Like, you just killed that kid.
Oh my God. He was just a boy.
I haven't seen that. That's the Donner cut. Oh, I gotta find that.
Now that's because he throws the light off of the police car at the kid who's riding his bike away. Yep. He was just a boy.
The boy in Texas who speaks this inexplicable British accent.
Yeah. Hey, man. I didn't care about stuff like that as a kid. I was just stuff.
It's watching it now. That's like, oh.
And people are flying around. You know, people are like. Blowing each other up. There's ice breath. There's heat vision. As a kid, you're just like, accent? Who fucking... I don't even know where this is.
No. You believe the man could fly.
Yeah.
That was the first time you saw it. You're like, wow.
And he was... I mean, Reeves was the iconic Superman for a generation.
Well, and I think you needed somebody to be able to stand back against that as far as the way Terrence Stamp was someone who kind of carried the... pomp of the committee that condemned yeah. them, you know, like the old yeah. Kryptonian way. We don't get a lot of view of Krypton in these old movies, like not like we did in Man of Steel, which I thought was one of the other brilliant things about that movie, was how much we saw of Krypton, what they yeah. turned Krypton into, an actual other planet with like creatures that they
that
ride.
Great, yeah, that yeah. that was amazing. You know, they're doing this TV show. Have you guys heard? Are you excited? I don't know if this is a good idea. It's called Krypton.
Krypton, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it takes place. So Gotham, they got Gotham, right?
I was going to say, is it like Gotham, but with Krypton?
It is, only older. Like, Gotham takes place when Bruce is like 10, 11. Krypton takes place like 500 years before the planet blows up. So what is the point of this?
But I think they might show us like a doomsday.
So what would be the point of doing a TV show about Pompeii?
Are they doing that now too?
I'm throwing that out there as a counterpoint. I mean, you can still have drama. You can still have tension. Yeah. And yes, fine. You know that the volcano's going to blow up.
You
know
where it's going to end.
You still have tension there, right?
I mean,
suppose you could do a thing where, you know, just the argument between the scientists and the politicians and,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, different sects that maybe break out and they're like, we believe this guy, start kind of a cult, and they try to escape.
And that could also inform the creation of people like Zod. They could like the history and the mythology that they followed when they're deciding, you know, the Kryptonian government has lost their way and we're leading a revolt, you know. But it's interesting how in the old movie, we just see them after they're apprehended, when they're being sentenced. We don't see any.
You see them in like a big hall with like a projection screen.
Yeah, just of those giant faces, and they're in that beam of light in the hula hoops that are.
The hula hoops. those were transfixed. I would just stare at those. I'm like, how is that? How are they doing that?
Like that's a future prison cell right there.
I would just stare at like, are those connected? Or are they really? Because the illusion of it is amazing.
It was really cool. That was one of the cool effects. And, like, I think he's even still staying there, like, all kind of, like, at attention, like, very militaristic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so
he carried this presence that, like, even though he didn't have Superman's size and stature, you kind of felt like if this guy yelled at you to kneel, and if you didn't have Superman powers, you're kneeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they definitely came in as a force. The other best part of this moment is where the big guy just tries to fly and just falls.
Yeah.
He's like,
And, you know, that guy in real life was this big, scary, like, dude who had all kinds of ties to criminal. Yeah, and he had ties to, like, criminals and criminal organizations. Like, I hate to throw as much adulation to, like, established podcast like basically run by movie stars, but if you ever want to listen to the How Did This Get Made, where they talk about Superman 3 and 4, it's that guy who played the goon from Superman 2, the one superhero.
He was a heavyweight boxing contender in the 60s and 70s.
He guests with them on those episodes.
Oh, shit, he's on the episode.
And he talks a lot of shit, man. He lets a lot of things out from the closet. It's like, whoa, I can never watch these movies again.
I love that. Like, you know, the 80s, they all had, every, like, franchise had, like, Jaws from James Bond.
Yep.
Is he still alive?
Yes, he's still alive.
I want to hear some shit behind the scenes of those movies.
I just met somebody this weekend who met him. I was at the car show up in Mahwah, New Jersey. And there were people who knew, like, Eric Estrada was there. I didn't really talk to Eric Estrada.
Eric Estrada is still pimping it.
Fucking molester, yo. He was straight up molesting women. I'm just like, dude, I know you guys, like, you know, grope a little bit. Holy shit. You're not even trying to hide it, bro. Wow. Wow.
Richard Kiel is Jaws. Yeah, I love this guy. He's so scary looking.
Yeah. I'm like,
7'2".
Are those jaws real? Like, yeah, he's an alien, man. He's descended from.
Muted.
Yeah, he's almost got, like, you know, that quality. That, what would you do besides become like a character actor for a movie?
Especially you know? For Bond.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
But it's, I mean, I think the fact that even, like, you know, Kevin Smith and Jay and Silent Bob do the whole son of Jor-El Neil before Zod and Mallrats.
Yeah,
it is something that is just sort of lasted in your lexicon of badass phrases. It's almost on the level of Ezekiel, you know, 25-17 in Pulp Fiction for all of us 90s kids. But on the way into the 90s, we had, which ironically, it's almost like the fate knew we were going to be recording tonight, because I always like to have the TV on in the background, and I turned on, and what's starting as soon as I start the Skype call but the 1989 Tim Burton Batman movie? Yes.
I think it's Keaton's birthday, too.
Oh, is that what it is today? Yeah. It's Keaton's Keaton Day.
Good
timing.
What an iconic moment in movie history for us to be recording iconic moments in movie history. Is Keaton Day. So to not to date the episode record date too much, because this will be coming out pretty quickly, but anyway... yeah, we're going to move right on into that amazing Batman movie, which re-legitimized comic book films at the time. And something that was, I think, huge moment from the trailers, huge moment when it finally happens in the movie. But the Joker, so it's two villains back to back here. And where does he get those wonderful toys? Or I guess the entire museum dinner date sequence, if you think about it.
But. In a lot of ways, I feel like this rehabilitated Batman.
Oh, well, I mean, weren't...
Before this was, you really just had the 1960s TV show.
I think this
was all camp.
This rehabilitated all comic book movies. I think at this point in time, before this, really, I think it only was the Superman movies that were mainstream. Yeah.
Did Superman 4 had already come out at this point?
Yeah. And I think I know, that was that was why they needed...
Exactly, that's why they need rehabilitated.
Yeah, I'm going to confirm that while we talk about this here.
Yeah, Superman 4 came out in 1987.
2 years earlier. Yeah, this, I think you're right. This could be because then, you know, your Blades came after this, and in the 90s Marvel tried some more and failed with, like, a Punisher and Captain America.
Couple Punisher movies, actually.
Oh, my God. Like, everything in the 90s they tried is just not... It wasn't ready. The time was not right. The effects weren't there. But I got to tell you, man, this is, like, one of my favorite all-time comic book movies ever because... I was 13 when this came out, so I'm going to date myself. But this is before the internet, so I was reading Wizard comic books. I was trying to get every scoop. I read the novelization. I was that kid. I was that dork. I was like, this movie is so quotable. And what's interesting about this line is that there's more in the novelization. And I feel like he gave the reading, and you notice it cuts real weird right after he says the line. Because I think the full line, he goes, where does he get those wonderful toys? And he's like... Well, don't just stand there. Go and ask him. He, like, barks commands. And that was in the novel. Like, the novel actually has a lot of extra fun little parts. That I imagine were in the script at one point, maybe got filmed, and got cut out.
I had a friend who had the comic book translation, that had more dialogue, like, for everybody. It was kind of like one of these things where you're like, the movie's really watered down if this is what's floating around out there in the other formats. But, again, it was... It's almost like mind-boggling to remember the time before the internet when stuff like this. Because
how did you find anything out?
Exactly,
well,
and
remember, at the time there was a big deal, like Michael Keaton as Batman.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
How does that make sense?
And then I think again,
you
need
watch Beetlejuice.
You need the you need the counter to legitimize the whole idea. So you have Jack Nicholson signing on to be the Joker, and everyone's like, "Oh shit, hold on."
I think he gets like first billing too. His name is probably first.
Yeah, well,
just like Arnold did in the later movies. He's like, "No, my name goes first."
Oh god, that one is the one that shall never be mentioned. Although I guess arguably Schwarzenegger is the best part of that movie, but in this one,
going into this movie, man, it was completely risky. Like nobody, like you had Tim Burton, the guy who made Beetlejuice, with the little short, shrimpy guy, and then Jack Nicholson, and you're like, what? This can't be. Oh, we're going to do Batman, the campy 60s thing?
And you're going to make it dark? What?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. The Joker we were used to from the Adam West days was like, you know, the Cesar Romero running around just laughing at stuff, kind of like a jolly clown. But like the comic book people who know, like, no, dude, this guy's deranged. Like,
so
when
got,
you see what...
gangster clown in this.
Yeah, but what... Yeah, yeah, it was very, like... It was very kind of Godfather-ish, too. And, like, the way he comes back and, like, has his moment where he takes out his old boss is very Godfather feeling. But, like, when you see where it eventually went with Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, what I think Jared Leto is trying to have something comparable to. But It's I never had that feeling about the Joker from the Jack Nicholson, even admiring, like, you know, where does he get those wonderful toys? It's sort of just like, it's very benign compared to what happens later and what he kind of should have been maybe even at this time.
This is like one of my favorite Jokers because I love Jack's crazy, weird little ad-libs. Like, he's saying shit that really doesn't make sense. If you think about it, like, I could do every line of this movie, and some of this shit, I'm like, what are you saying? Where he's like, I'm of a mind.
I'm of a mind makes a moogie.
What the fuck is that? Never rub another man's rhubarb.
Yeah. What are you talking about? Needs an enema. Like, whoa.
I love it. And where is the Batman? He's at home washing his tights. Yeah. He's like, he's just so wacky. Even in this moment, like before, she asks him, what do you want? He goes, I don't know, a little song, a little dance.
Batman's head on a lance. Tell me what do you know about them. Yeah.
And then she throws the water.
My head on the $1 bill.
Yeah,
my face on the $1 bill.
And I think it's funny she throws the water on him and he does the whole I'm melting. And she's starting to, like, console him.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought that was weird. Like, she transitioned from, like, like, she's, like, tapping him on the shoulder.
Yeah. And then he turns around and goes, boo, it's great. It's so great.
And the fact, though, that, too, and I remember this kind of vividly because this is 1989. I was about 9-10 years old watching this when it was on home video. And when I was on home video, actually, this was one of the ones that was super expensive for a while. It didn't come on in an affordable form of home video.
VHS was like $80, right?
Yeah,
the first run right away for movies.
It was like, and there were, like, you know, some places like Suncoast Video and Saturday Matinee, they would have it up behind the register, like just a few of them. And I was like, what's the price tag on that? They're like $88. And I'm like, oh, fuck. It's the same thing with T2. You're like, holy shit, $100?
When a month later, it's like $20. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember thinking that, like, when I got it for Christmas from my uncle, I was just like, oh my God, this was $100. And he's just like, no, it wasn't. And I'm like, yes, it was. I know it was. But it's like, we watched it, and that was the other thing too. Like at our house, like this might seem crazy because it's like, you know, not all the movies we get for Christmas are ever Christmas themed. There's some. It's like this. It's like Batman, or it's like sometimes it's straight up horror movies. That's what we wind up watching. Like we'll watch John Wick if we wind up getting that for Christmas. We're watching John Wick for Christmas, and it's like, yeah, Merry Christmas. This fucking serial killer is just murdering a bunch of people. It's like Merry Christmas. The Joker is defacing all this art in the museum, and I remember watching it with my grandmother. She was like, oh, look at what they're doing to all those paintings. And I'm like, you're kind of missing the point of the scene, Grandma. But then I watched it again recently. I'm like, yeah, you know, it is. It's kind of fucked up. A lot of that stuff is probably really expensive art, you know, very important. And Kim Basinger, Vicky Vale, her face when she's watching it all, you know, with like holding that, you can tell she's like disgusted. Like, how dare you destroy this artwork? And he's like, are you kidding? I'm going to gas the whole goddamn city soon. Like everybody's going to look like me and then die.
I love that line where he's flipping through the portfolio. He goes, the skulls, the bodies. I don't know if it's art, but I like it.
Yeah, you give it this. It's like, crap. Crap.
Oh,
crap.
That's where he shows the defaced his girlfriend.
Yes.
Felicia.
Yeah. That movie is so creepy, too. It's so disturbing.
Thinking back on it and like kind of like looking over my shoulder every once in a while at the screen, it's like, yeah, you know, it was kind of, it brought the psychology of comic books that only the comic book fans kind of knew existed with those stories. I think it was very much like from the outside, comic books were thought to be just very childish and like silly. Yep. And it's like, no, these are some dark stories
in here too.
I'm sorry.
We can work some adult themes in here.
And Batman's perfect for it. And I think kids who look at this movie now, they're going to be like, what are you fucking high? That's campy as shit.
But yeah.
Man, after the Nolan movies,
yeah.
You gotta understand that to us was like, whoa, somebody's treating this seriously.
Yeah.
Somebody's taking it seriously for once.
Yep, absolutely.
No one did that before.
And the thing that Nolan did was he just actually made the movies about Batman. Like, those movies were never about actually Batman.
Yeah.
The villains, and it was very annoying.
Yeah, especially once that second one, once they threw all those villains in together.
Like,
I mean,
this works great. Just keep shoving more villains in here.
And you know that they were planning on doing more, like having Catwoman appear at the end again, looking up at the bat signal. And I think it was once Tim Burton wasn't doing them anymore, it sort of like it instantly felt like a reboot. That was the first real kind of
selling toys after that.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, I know they were trying for this living comic book feeling.
Then we ended up with bat nipples, and it was all downhill.
But I mean, this movie, you needed this movie to get to Ben Affleck right now.
Yeah, like, true.
You needed this movie to happen, and it's still like so important. I still think it's up there with like one of the best Batman movies.
And I haven't seen Suicide Squad yet, but I have heard mixed reviews to Jared Leto's Joker.
He's in there for like 2 minutes. You barely see him.
I've heard mixed reviews. Period about Suicide Squad.
I still have to see it so we can discuss it on Marvel vs. DC, but, you know.
The thing is killing at the box office. It's made over $600 million worldwide.
So did Avatar.
This movie did not cost as much as Avatar. So they're like, yeah, it's a hit. We made profit on one, finally.
But even, like, this movie, I know there's a lot of trailers that had similar spots, but I feel like, you know, you didn't have moments like this that lasted stood out to you. Like, okay, yeah, Harley breaks the thing and takes the bag. Oh, we're bad guys. It's like, it doesn't have the weight of where does he get, like, the weight of, like, a Michael Mann film, hero villain actually admiring each other kind of thing moments. You know what I mean?
Still, he's in awe at that point where he's like,
yeah,
oh,
like,
look at
that damn
guy.
It. That's what I, and what does he do next? He builds floats with giant balloons. Like, he builds his own toys. You know what I mean? So it's like, you see how.
And he breaks out his own gags. He's got the giant gun.
And how, like, they all force each other to evolve, you know? It's like, again, like, kneel before Zod. All right, I'll kneel when I can fucking lift you up while I'm crushing your hand and throw you across the room.
Exactly.
You know? It's like, you're asking, get what you ask for.
They just didn't need to make Joker the killer of the Waynes. That, I see what they were kind of doing for, like, the general audience to tie it together, but I'm like, wait a minute, that means he would be, like, 70 years old. None of this makes sense.
Well, they did show how young he was when it happened, and he was like an old man Joker compared to...
So even when it happened, if he's in his, let's say in his mid-20s,
again, it's like old man Joker. It's not, it's not the Heath Ledger young guy who can run around and do all the shit that he's doing Joker. Like, I buy the theory of him being a mid-30s, you know, vet back from Iraq, having PTSD that drove him completely insane. And
that's not bad. Yeah. Jared Leto, he's cut. This is a young, like, strong cut. It's not bad. I just wanted to see more. They cut him out of the whole movie.
Well, and he said that he filmed enough to do an entire film. So it's like
they cut it out to take out the abuse between him and Harley, and he pretty much comes off as like this loving boyfriend who pops up every now and then trying to save his girlfriend. Legit. I'm like, boy.
Yeah, well, maybe if they do, are they doing a Harley Joker movie? I mean,
yeah, they probably will.
Margot
Robbie is too hot a property not to at this point.
And why would they not explore the character that way? You know what I mean? Like, after that was my complaint after Dark Knight ended. I'm like, I want a Joker movie. I want an entire movie just about the Joker. And, you know, the sort of great tragedy of him not being around to continue and do any more moments like that. But even at that time, Jack Nicholson in the press was like, I warned him that playing the Joker is a character that stays with you. It's a character that messes with your mind. And when you look at what he did in the Batman movie, we're talking about the creepiness of it, but it was still very tame compared to what Heath Ledger did, you know? And there's that old Hollywood mysticism about how characters have like a life force of their own.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they kind of leaned very heavily on that with one of those later Nightmare on Elm Street movies of like after they tried to end the franchise, Freddy was not ready to be dead. And so like he kind of is breaking through into reality a little bit. And I think the Joker is another one of those characters that has that sort of mythos attached to it. So, you know, for Jack Nicholson to be saying, yeah, man, you got to be careful with that. And what we're seeing in this movie is still like, yeah, you're not that horrible, dude. Like, serious, you know?
The irony is, like, they killed, in Batman 89, they killed the Joker, which I was like, why'd you kill him? You can't use him. And then in Dark Knight, an amazing Joker, and they actually don't kill him.
Right.
Well, you just, I mean, in that one, Batman doesn't, in Nolan's Batman, he doesn't, explicitly doesn't kill people.
He doesn't kill anyone, that's right.
Okay,
that's right.
Burton was a little much looser about the whole
accident.
Not killing.
He slipped, it fell, I don't know.
Yeah, my Drew.
The guy down the bell shaft. I didn't kill him, the fall might have.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, he didn't mean to drop him in the acid in the beginning. That was, he definitely was trying to, like, hold right. him.
No, this Batman was definitely not opposed to killing people.
Yeah, he's pretty brutal. That's true. The fucking the palm strike to the crotch.
Yeah.
That's just dirty. You're fucking dirty now,
Batman. And then Affleck is, I mean, he was blam-towning people all over that Batman Superman movie. Right. That was like lead flying.
However, I gotta say, best fucking fight Batman I've seen on screen. That was amazing.
Like, yeah.
It was fantastic. It's just kind of, you know, tell me why he's a little unhinged. Show me a little bit. It just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not as big a hater of Batman Superman as most of the world was, but I don't know. Like, there was, like, as much homage to this, like, the feeling and the tone and the sort of spirit of this Batman.
Yeah.
Combined with the Bale Batman in that, you know, to kind of merge as much of the world as possible and make him like the old man Batman now, you know, and I don't know.
The Ultimate Edition BVS, it smooths out a lot of it.
Really? All right, so I'm going to pick that up then. I've been teetering on picking it up.
I would recommend you just watch that version. Don't watch the theater.
Don't watch the original. We had no choice when it was the only one.
And then the Ultimate Edition, I'm like, this is the movie you're going to put out. Like, why did you cut all this stuff out? It makes so much more sense now.
It makes it rated R, though, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, but barely, and I don't even know why. It's just for a little bit more violent.
And if they're going to do that, let's just throw some tits in there, guys. Yeah, let's just have some naked chicks running around. If we're going R-rated, let's have some boobs.
I just wanted him to say, like, I wanted Batman to be like, fuck you, Superman.
Yeah.
Like, at least once or something. I don't know.
Well, I'm definitely going to check that out. But, you know, it's still... Is there a moment that stands out? Like, where does he get those wonderful toys?
Can't beat Nicholson in this movie. Like, every line is quotable.
Thing about this, the theme that's kind of carrying through from the first, it's like there's a lot in these iconic moments in comic book movies especially that are all about sort of this pomp and sort of bravado of these characters. Like, a lot of their definition is coming from moments like this, you know? So for the Joker to not even register that he's doing this huge dastardly thing, and his only thing that kind of catches him off guard is like, holy shit, that guy's got awesome gear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just murdered a whole restaurant full of people just to go on a date with her.
I want those toys.
You know? And it's like the same thing with Zod. He's like, I am conquering a whole bunch of innocent people just to make you kneel before me, because the whole planet we came from died, and I can't go after your dad anymore. So I have to.
Closure.
Yeah, I need to do that whole vicariously punish you to get at your father in the afterlife, maybe. You know. So if he's watching this, it's like, fuck you, dude. And so even going into the third movie, there's a certain level of that too, but I think on probably the lightest scale, because this guy's technically the hero in this movie. Yep. And this is The Crow, Brandon Lee's final performance. I think maybe it's this whole interchange really with Officer Albrecht, but it's the...
I forgot it was Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, man. Like Ghostbuster talking to a dead guy. Yeah, there you go. But where he says, I say I'm dead and I move. And that's a response for, I say you move and you're dead. The cop telling him to freeze.
Yeah.
And he says, I say I'm dead and I move. I love The Crow, man.
Dude, this is, I don't remember if I discovered the comic book first or the movie. It may have been the comic book. If you haven't read J.O.R., it's black and white, it's gritty, it's pulp, it's so good. And this movie really captured that kind of, like, kids who were, like, not very popular and, like, kind of into the more dark stuff. And I think the Brandon Lee here, he kind of reminded me of the Joker. I was like, this dude could have been a good Joker.
Yeah.
With some of these lines and the looks where he's like, the line where he's like, they're all dead already.
They just don't know it yet. Oh, my God.
And then even the makeup, I'm like, he could have been a really good Joker.
Yeah. And the makeup was a Kiss homage, I believe, right? It was sort of part of the J.J. Obar being a big Kiss fan.
Yeah, he loved it. Yeah, he did kind of love all those bands.
Yeah, I met him
really?
A couple of years ago at Comic-Con in Chicago. Our booth was right across from his, the group I had been podcasting with. So I made sure to at least one of these go over and be like, hey, man, I love The Crow, dude. I just got to come over and shake your hand. I, of course, didn't even think that he was going to be there, so I didn't bring my graphic novel with me. But I did read the comic. I definitely discovered the movie first, and it was more because the news of Brandon Lee passing away.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I was like, holy shit. And then it was like, yeah, he was making this movie about a rock star who comes back to life to avenge his own death. And I'm like, that sounds amazing.
Oh, yeah. Only the crow in the movie version is actually more humane.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the comic book, it's brutal. Yeah, man. And that's, so they didn't even fuck around. They went straight for the R rating. That was like, yep, man, there's going to be some shit going down in this movie. We got people cutting the eyes out of OD'd hookers and burning them to do prophetic future seeing through the smoke. You know, there's like a lot. Yeah. Was that Bai Ling?
Yes.
Holy crap. That was a long time ago, man.
Yes, yes, it was.
For her to be in a movie and then eventually become Bai Ling. You know, like, that's crazy.
And Michael Wincott as Top Dollar.
Top Dollar.
Tintin. All right, you killed Tintin.
No, Tintin was Lawrence Mason.
I think this is also one of the first times they did a posthumous special effects putting the actor in kind of thing.
Because they filmed the movie in reverse order, so they had like most of the end. They had like the end and most of the middle and the beginning they hadn't shot. So a lot of the opening of the movie.
The opening was the CGI stuff.
Yeah, the beginning, the times he's in
makeup
like,
and everything else. Yeah,
yeah, when he sees himself in the mirror and punches the mirror, that's a forced.
Okay, and Clone, you'll appreciate this. David Patrick Kelly.
Yes, of course. Oh God, he played T Bird. Yeah, man.
And we recently covered him in John Wick.
Yeah,
Charlie,
and mentioned that he's also the iconic character from The Warriors, who's clinking the glasses together.
Oh,
going,
he's the Warriors.
Yes,
come
has.
Out and play. Yeah, man, he's also in Commando. I love him in Commando.
Spike Lee movies too. He's a Spike Lee guy.
He's got that. He's got that kind of like face where he could be a good guy if he wanted to, but we've seen him be a bad guy so much that. It's impossible.
There are some character actors that it's hard for you to write for them because the minute you see them, you're like, oh, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't be. He's not a good guy.
Like, I just don't buy him as a good guy.
Yeah.
I guess we should probably also mention the actor who just passed away who appeared in The Crow. I'm IMDBing right now. Where is he? John Polito.
John Polito, that's right.
He just
amazing character actor. Yeah,
he just passed away this
week.
That's
right. I saw that. And the Polito's another guy. You've seen him in everything.
Yep. He
Lebowski.
Well, I love him in The Big Lebowski when he comes running up and he's like that other detective. Well, who is he in the fuck, I should have just closed the IMDb.
Oh, let's say he's in Modern Family. He's the guy with the other closet business.
that his dad knows. Fucking 2016 on its horrible.
I mean, Gene Wilder and then Polito, you can follow that up with?
Yeah. Like, you're taking away too much, man.
I mean, at this point, the Oscars, like, that. Just think about that In Memoriam segment. It's going to be like 3 hours long.
Well, it's also like, yeah, now we're just going to be watching for who gets, you know, skipped over and forgotten about.
No one gets out alive.
It's terrible. Oh, man, I'm just trying to find out who what's his name in The Big Lebowski.
Consider the fact that, you know, it's that boomer generation.
Yeah.
And so many of them, so many of them are getting older now that, okay, it's getting to be that time.
DeFino, that's who he played in The Big Lebowski. He was that detective DeFino. Yeah, but he was only 65 or 63, something like that. He's not that old. 65.
Young.
Yeah, that's not that old, yeah.
Unless he had, you know, major drug issues at some time earlier in his life that we didn't know about. I mean, Hollywood, you never know. It's that dark curtain of Hollywood, man. You know, it's I'm dead and I move. Yeah, because you don't even need to be alive to finish the fucking movie. As long as we have some of you, we're finishing this goddamn
movie. We're not even going to need actors in the future.
I'll tell you what. When I found out, and I thought it was bullshit until they even admitted it, but in that Star Wars Episode 1, when you find out that it wasn't Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson doing all the sword fighting, and they did the Running Man digitally mapping somebody's face onto stuff.
Oh, they face
people.
Yeah, they face planted them. Well, you know, in Social Network,
yeah, they did the same
thing. Twins,
yeah,
where they like they only had one of them, and they would face swap the other guy. And they were like, "What? Wait a minute, what?" That blew my mind.
And I mean, this movie after Brandon Lee died, they is kind of one of the first movies where they tried to make that work, and they only made sure to do it in quick moments, yep. like, you know, just seeing him in the mirror for a second, or, you know, if he kind of like walks through the frame. I remember there's one where it looks really bad and you only see him for a second, though. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh God, you know, it's at least Han shooting first looks worse than this. That was one thing, you know, it was like that no matter how hard they tried, and having him step on that fucking Jabba the Hutt tail in that redone episode.
Over that
yeah,
tag.
It's just like they lift the frame, they move the frame, they drop the frame, you're like, hmm.
Although I remember, how about the mom on Sopranos where they actually went and cut old, and that I thought worked, it was really eerie because it worked really well. I was like, whoa, they did it.
But at the time, there was either something they were not doing with, they couldn't, it seems like they could never match completely, like, the skin tones the right way, and especially with this, because it was light and dark.
The lighting is always tricky, or the masking. Sometimes you notice a little outline.
You can see, and you're like, ah, that kind of takes me out of the scene. Like, I'm not trying to be a dick. I know the guy died. It's part of the reason I love this movie, but, shit. But at least these moments they clearly had. Like, the I'm dead, I move, that whole dialogue interaction with Albrecht, you know, they probably did that right away when they were shooting that movie. Because that set the tone. Again, another shot from the trailer, and that set the tone of, like, well, the Crow, once he realizes who he is going to be pretty unstoppable just because of that. And he's just like, I'm dead and I move. Fuck you.
It's like, God damn it.
The only reason I'm not ninjutsuing you right now because I know who you are, and at some point you'll remember who I was. I'm going to send you on a little bit of a quest of discovery. Be a detective. Figure this out. You know, it was... It was cool, man. He had a little bit of a Batman thing going on, too, though, with the darkness. And the...
Yeah, he was very much doing the stealth high-bye. Like, he's crowded and he's gone. It's like, God
damn. He's in the corner, and he's just, like, he's always watching, perched somewhere.
Yeah.
It was a combination of a bunch of different kind of superhero things, and they did it so good.
But then you also have, like, the subversion of that, where it was, are you going to go out through the window again? No, I thought I'd use your front door.
Mm-hmm. At least he didn't do any of that walking against the wind shit. I hate that. Guy shows up looking like a mom from hell and then turn around and he's gone, you know? And I think at the same time, you bought the superhero feel of the movie, even though it had like a supernatural element to it.
Yeah.
Because like it's the idea that he's only alive because he's got this crow.
Yeah.
You know, it's very rare that we have a superhero whose Achilles heel is this other character that needs to kind of just be in the vicinity. And it was very much even like having the bad guy be so into mysticism to where he bought it right away. Like, oh, all right, thought we killed this guy a year ago. What's going on? You know, and it's like,
oh, we'll just kill him again.
And then you have the crow carries his soul back to the land of the living. Like, he had a lot of weird lines, too. What was the guy's name? The bad guy. The big
Top
guy.
Top Dollar.
Top Dollar was the
Michael Wincott.
Michael Wincott. Oh, yeah.
That was
his
name? Man, that's
Top
terrible.
Top Dollar. The book is full of names like that. Like,
Tintin
and Top Dollar.
Well, Tintin, I think, and T-Bird and Fun Boy, they all were.
Fun Boy, yeah. So it was like...
Skank. Skank was the last one.
Skank's right there.
Skank's dead.
I mean, you're right. They very quickly like established their own universe, and everyone and everyone. The rules were established. Everyone bought in, and it didn't matter. Like, you know how things work.
Yeah.
Great Tony Todd playing Grange.
Mm-hmm. Tony Todd
is in it too. Oh, he's
scary. Yeah, he plays Grange.
For him to then eventually go on to be the death, you know, representative in those Final Destination, at least the first couple of those movies. The first two, he was like that mortician who explained to them, like, death is going to get you no matter
His
what.
His voice is great. Fucking Candyman. He's on Flash. He's the voice of the reverse.
The reverse Flash? There you go.
Yeah. But then when he takes his mask off, he's like a goofy white guy. Kind
of. But you know you're in trouble when Candyman is fighting for the bad guys.
Yeah.
Dude, and I live Taking in Chicago, orders. And like I think I remember like that spot in Cabrini. I was like, there's like a little... Like a little outhouse it used to be when Cabrini was up, and I would drive by and be like, that's fucking Candyman? Is this shit for real? Like, it's because, like, for them to set it in the projects was brilliant for a horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of makes sense to feed off everyone's emotions and the way they're living and how that would create, like, a little monster there.
Yeah. And I think he always just had a little bit of that dripping from his presence in movies, you know? And so for him to be in this world that's so dark, like, if anything that kind of got translated from the comic book brilliantly to The Crow was practically that they did it the almost black and white.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. Like, I don't remember any color. I know the movie was in color.
There's flesh tones every once in a while, but for the most part, it is black and white. And we're not talking about
the club scenes.
Yeah, and but like, or like, you know, when Sarah was eating the hot dog, like, we would see their faces lit up in like different scenes, but for the most part, it felt like a black and white movie.
Or like the comic book, like, yeah. That's why it felt a lot like the comic book.
But it wasn't doing it in the same way that they had to do like Sin City.
Right. Where that was, I mean, there was color, but like, you don't even remember the color, but the color, you know, to give you before, you know, his girlfriend died and kind of like changed the tone of the movie.
But it was monochrome. It was like all red, you know, it was practically like a black and red instead of black and white. It was monochromatic for the most part. But then there would be flashes of lightning and you'd kind of see, and it was just highlights though. It wasn't splotches
of blood and color. Man, I kind of want to see this whole thing again. I wonder if it holds up.
See, I think The Crow holds up to people who watched it when it came out. I tried watching it. This was maybe 4 or 5 years ago now. 4 years ago now, and I was in my previous relationship, which was with somebody who was about 6 to 7 years younger than me, and a bunch of friends that were her age were over watching it, and they could not even get into it in the slightest.
It was
to the point where about a third to, you know, halfway through, the comments started and the little like digs, and you're just like, hey, shut the fuck up. All right, he died making this and it's awesome and you're all fucking crazy, and now I don't know why.
The Crow on fire on the ground.
Was so badass.
That's classic. You say that because now in the world we have your Marilyn Manson, have these other, this is before, all predated all of that.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, this dude is the legit goth motherfucker right here.
Yeah.
And when you look at the soundtrack that went along with it.
Yes.
It was just like a compilation album, man.
I forgot the Pure song. Yes. That was the best part of the movie was the soundtrack.
You had Nine Inch Nails covering Joy Division.
Yeah. Dead Souls. Ugh.
Big Empty. Stone Temple Pilots Big Empty was on the soundtrack, too. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, there was
I played the shit out of this thing. It's all coming back to me now.
There was a Pantera song. Yeah, My Life with Thrill Kill Cult, Medicine,
Jesus and Mary Chain.
Jesus and Mary Chain.
Femmes, Rage Against
Screwdriver.
I forgot how awesome this soundtrack was.
This was like the soundtrack for the mid-90s.
Yeah, yes, Golgotha Tenement Blues.
For a certain kind of kid, this was the soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the kind of thing where we bought it before the movie came out.
Then they
continued that. Like, the second movie was shit, but the soundtrack was pretty good.
The only good thing that came out of the second movie was Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they did a second movie.
And also, the girl who played Sarah was pretty hot, and she's on a bunch of stuff now. I forget who.
Okay. Who was the guy?
What was his name? He's been in, like, he played
City of Angels.
Yeah, he played Marius in that Queen of the Damned movie, the guy who played the main
Vincent Perez.
Oh, it's a different character.
It's another soul brought by the Crow. Sarah is the Kaiser.
Mia Kirshner playing Sarah.
Yes, who's also in Not Another Teen Movie as the crazy whore sister who wants to sleep with her brother, who is played by Chris Evans, now known as Captain America.
Thomas Jane, too.
Yeah, Thomas Jane was in that as well. Yep, and that was before Thomas Jane was Thomas Jane.
Yeah.
Oh,
wait, who did Thomas Jane play in City of Angels?
Nemo.
Oh my God!
This does not look good.
I think he was the Peep Show guy.
Oh, he was one of the bad guys, though.
Yeah.
God damn it! Oh,
how many keys did they make? Then there's The Crow Salvation.
See, Salvation, I remember watching on cable and not thinking it was that bad.
I'll see that one.
Yeah. No, they kind of ran the franchise.
Isn't what's his name in Salvation though? Fred Willard as like the bad guy.
What? You can't take a movie seriously.
Kirsten Dunst was in that? Really?
Oh, then there's Wicked Prayer. I didn't watch that one.
How many of these goddamn
Purgatory? Where did that come from? And then there was Stairway to Heaven was the TV show.
Right, which I never watched.
Oh, yeah.
I never got into that.
And that was where he was played by the guy who was then in that foreign film, the Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Wait, Walton Goggins was in Salvation.
Oh, God. And I love Walton Goggins. Come on, man. Salvation. Let's see. Who is in this one?
I almost might need to see this now.
Is this the one with Kirsten Dunst? Yeah, and
yeah,
like
this is the Eric Mabeus.
Eric Mabeus is the guy who comes back as the
Fred
crow.
Ward is the bad guy.
Yeah, Fred Ward.
As the captain.
Oh, William Atherton's in it too. See, I remember watching it and I was kind of like, this actually isn't horrible. It's better than City of Angels.
Well, that does not take much.
I know, but still.
Rap.
And then
I think what killed me with City of Angels was that they went from the very black and white kind of filmography.
Oh,
everything like sepia tone.
Yeah, it was very orange. Oh my God, is this Eddie Furlong in Wicked Prayer? No.
Is that another crow? Oh, there's a man. How many of these?
Eddie.
They were still trying to do Crow in 2005. Yeah, that's definitely Eddie Furlong. It looks like him.
Oh,
so who is that?
I don't know. There is no Eddie Furlong listed.
No,
in
it's
there.
Edward Furlong. It's Jimmy Cuervo.
Oh,
the Crow.
God, I
oh,
see.
God. Danny Trejo. Oh, this is like a Hispanic one.
Yeah, that's why it's called Wicked Prayer.
Wicked Prayer, Jorge Jimenez.
There was supposed to be one back in the day when City of Angels had first come out. I had heard that there was one they were working on that Rob Zombie was supposed to direct, and it was supposed to be The Crow in Medieval Times.
Oh.
Like, it was like Spawn had done a Medieval Times kind of thread in the comic book, and Crow was going to take a, like, film-wise, was going to take
it. Interesting.
But it's still nothing captured the spirit of the Crow, and like in my mind it's just the comic book in the first movie. Like, even I don't mind City of Angels, but I can't I can't acknowledge the Crow franchise. It's just the movie and the comic book to me,
and
stuff
it's the
like
first
this
comic book, not all the other comic books that came out,
right?
Yeah, where did he stop? He's not still making those, I don't
Obar
think. Yeah,
I don't think he was making them anymore, but he had franchised out the title and the character.
Oh, so no.
There were a
happened?
Bunch more Crow comics that came out that were of
lesser caliber.
Yeah, I was going to say better or worse. I mean, we just leave it
questionable
at that.
Standards.
Yes.
Yeah, it might have been like a one and done deal with just the first one was great. Leave
the
it
graphic
alone,
novel,
it.
Yeah, the graphic
how
novel.
I would have bet somebody's going to try to reboot it like in the next 3 years.
Yeah, well, we can't
take that. I will not take that bet.
The movie? You don't think the movie at this point? I mean, what the hell? This, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. Point Break, dude. Point Break.
Yeah,
I mean, they did and I mean, I think it's like Doctor Strange does really good, and it's all like crazy, weird, magic-y, you know, that kind of shit. I'd be like, oh, they could do the Crow now. Let's do it again. Heard rumor Jason Momoa possibly in talks to play Eric Draven in a Crow remake.
See, that might be kind of cool.
I think that would work. I think he could be okay for that.
I could give it to Momoa.
Did you see him in the Conan?
No, I refuse.
Yeah. Okay, no. See, it actually kind of started out with him hunting down the people who had killed the people in his village and his father. In kind of a serial killer kind of way.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And it's like, okay, this worked. And then they kind of dropped that completely. I'm like, no, you guys, you had something going here.
That's another one of those. You should just leave that shit alone if you're not going to do it right, man. You know, just don't remake Conan. But I buy Momoa.
Yeah, it'd be all right.
As long as it's not like rebooting Big Trouble Little China with The Rock.
Oh, please, God, no. No, you can't remake. Well,
it's happening, man.
As long as they keep the general thread where Kurt Russell's character was the complete tool.
It's probably not going to stay that way.
Damn. That was the whole point of that movie, was the big white, the white guy was going out to save everybody and completely failed.
That was the iconicness of that moment in movie history, and they're getting it wrong.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's on Momoa's IMDb page. It says The Crow rumored.
Bruce.
Well, I'll tell you what that's not. It's not smoking.
It's not smoking.
Which, we, for our honorable mention this episode, we're going to throw out The Mask and pretty much, I guess, his whole introduction at the Coco Bongo Club in the yellow suit, you know, that was kind of just like him Jim Carrey-ing it up, Jim Carrey masking it up, however you want to look at it. But not many people realize right away on first viewing that that was based on a comic book, and it's like, hey, yes, it was. And again, comic book, far more brutal than the movie.
way more brutal than the
movie. Yeah, it was more of like an adult comic book, right? It wasn't. I don't think it was for kids.
Yeah, it was very much like the Joker with a bunch of sex and stuff in it, right?
Because and still really wacky and just absurd.
Yeah, and I think he is murdering people like brutally in the comic book. Like he's blowing heads off and shit. A lot of insanity is happening. And they're like, oh yeah, let's just water this down.
Let's
and
make this into a kids movie.
Yeah.
I know who'd be perfect for this. Jim Carrey.
Hey.
Oh, boy, he was a little bit perfect for this. I mean, I don't think they had to really give him much direction.
Yeah, no, it was kind of like, perfect. Whenever you have the mask on, you can do whatever you want. It's like, oh, my God, this is going to be awesome.
Here's a bag of blow. Okay, rolling.
Which I think, if you look at the parallels, like, they tried to have the Green Lantern be a little like this. You know what I mean? Like the ability to just like will things.
The powers are the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
This movie was weird for me. Like I wasn't really into it. I remember watching the cartoons afterwards.
Uh-huh. Oh, and, God. Yeah. They tried to keep it going.
It's just like, what is this? Like, it's so fucking over the top, manic, to the point where like it's campy. Cause like its head is an animated wolf and like, I'm supposed, but there's like cops and there's gangs. I'm like, I don't know how if I'm supposed to be taking this seriously. I'm not sure.
And there's the Mask of Loki, but there's gangsters.
And there's Cameron Diaz, and she.
And there's a love story in there.
Yeah, and you had late comic Richard Jenny in there too as the comic relief kind of sidekick type character, and I don't know, like you had all these benign things like him dancing Cuban Pete and making all the cops dance in a Congo line behind him, and then him pulling out like a million guns from each pocket. You know what I mean? And you're just like, yep, I'm going to blow away 100 billion people all at once. And you're like, wow.
Very like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Too. Yeah,
A lot of that, which is fun. And Cameron Diaz was hot.
Yeah, well, this was her introduction, I think, right?
It was, wasn't it? Like a kind of breakthrough.
And she was, not the emaciated skeleton she is these days. She actually had a little bit of meat on her bones back then. And I just remember, what was that, 93 that came out?
94,
94. I remember being in the theater, my friends and I were just like, holy shit, she was so hot. Stop the press. Who's that? It was definitely one of those, like, holy crap, we're going to be watching her. And then, like, you see her now, and she's in these stupid, like, what's it called? Charlie's Angels and all that shit. And you're like, what? It's like, she doesn't look like herself. She never looked like this again. She was like that a real-life Jessica Rabbit bombshell.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I love the concept, though. Like, it is a great kind of mythology of this mask. And, like, in the cartoon, they would explore that more with, like, different people who had masks, I think. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the dog would wear the fucking mask. And
And they made homage to that with that. I guess that was supposed to be picking up the part from the movie where Milo puts the mask on and saves the day.
Yeah.
But, you can't talk about comic book movies and have it just be all about the darkness. There's some light comic book movies out there. There's your Kick-Asses and your, Scott Pilgrim versus what's-her-name shit. The World. Is that what it is? Yeah, Scott Pilgrim versus The World. Which are a little bit brighter, flashier, and then you have your whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. But, we like to go to the iconic moments that got us here.
Absolutely.
So, but these discussions could go on forever and ever. So, we highly encourage you to email us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the conversation. Get your stuff read on the air. Or you could follow us on Twitter. We are at hollow9cast. And hollow9 is always spelled the word hollow, the number 9, INE, and whatever the rest. So if it's podcast or cast, like, come on. I'm trusting you guys to be smart enough to follow all of this. It's the new age, man. Hashtag it up. You can also find us on Facebook. We have a presence there under the Hollow9 Network. Imran, man, thank you for joining us tonight
and being a
part of this experiment that we do from time to time here talking about movies.
Dude, this is awesome.
What would you like to plug? Where can people find you? Tell us a little bit about what you guys do.
Oh, just all you got to do is visit jockandnerd.com. We have a weekly podcast. I'm the nerd. My co-host is the jock. And occasionally we have Rug Boy, who is a homeless, filthy American. don't use the P word. But we post usually once a week, sometimes twice a week. And you're going to get like a weekly geek digest. We go over comic book TV related news. We interview people in the industry. We'll review TV shows episodically.
occasionally we'll do movie reviews. We've had a lot of great guests. I pull people from my past. I went to art school in Brooklyn. So, like, one dude I know has won an Oscar for a short a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
And that's great. Another dude I know works on SNL. He's been working there for, like, 15 years as the Weekend Update guy.
Oh, nice.
Another dude I know is just – he works on Destiny for Bungie, and he's working on the new Destiny Rise of Iron expansion. That's a great episode. So we have a great interview with him about, like, how he got there. But jockandnerd.com, there's hours and hours of geeky content there.
Awesome. And you'll be able to find a link over there on the posting for this episode on holonine.podomatic.com. So thank you for your continued patronage there and for listening. And as always, namaste, folks. Join us again next time. Oh, yeah, let me not forget to tell everybody about International Podcast Day on September 30th. If you're listening to this and it's before...
International Podcast Day is September 30th, and you can help spread the word. International Podcast Day is dedicated to promoting podcasting worldwide. You may be asking, what can I do to get involved? It's pretty simple. First, head over to internationalpodcastday.com and check the suggestions. Second, use hashtag Podcast Day to join in the conversation. Remember September 30th. Now, let's start the conversation.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow Nine Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, Cast. Email us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow 9.